Luke chapter 22. Now the feast of unleavened bread drew nigh, which is called the Passover. And the chief priests and scribes sought how they might kill him, Jesus, for they feared the people. So they wanted to kill him, but the only thing stopping them was the people. Because remember, Jesus was still popular with the people. Then Satan entered into Judas, surnamed Iscariot, being of the number of the 12. Now this is a figure of speech. Satan didn't literally enter into Judas. It's a figure of speech. Judas, of course, had free will, and he was tempted by money and agreed to betray him. And he went his way and spoke with the chief priests and captains about how he might betray him to them. And they were glad and covenanted to give him money. I guess that means they made an agreement that they would give him money. And we know from other accounts that it was 30 pieces of silver. And he promised and sought opportunity to betray him in the absence of the multitude. In other words, when there weren't other people around, he would betray him. Because if he did it in front of the people, they would stand up for Jesus. Then came the day of unleavened bread, when the Passover must be killed, the Passover lamb. And he sent Peter and John, saying, "Go and prepare the Passover for us, that we may eat." And they said to him, "Where do you want us to prepare?" And he said to them, "Behold, when you have entered into the city, a man shall meet you bearing a pitcher of water. Follow him into the house where he enters, and you shall say to the master of the house, 'The master says to you, where is the guest chamber, where I shall eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he shall show you a large furnished upper room. Prepare it there." And they went and found it as he had said to them, and they prepared the Passover. A lot of times you'll hear this called the Last Supper, because it was the last meal that Jesus ate with his apostles before he was killed. And when the hour had come, he sat down and the 12 apostles with him. And he said to them, "With desire, I have desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer." I wanted to do this with you guys before I'm taken prisoner and crucified. "For I say to you, I will not eat of it anymore until it is fulfilled in the kingdom of God." In other words, there are things that have to happen per God's will. In other words, his crucifixion, his death, his burial, and his resurrection. All these things have to take place first. And he took the cup and gave thanks and said, "Take this and divide it among yourselves. For I say to you, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine until the kingdom of God comes." And he took bread and gave thanks and broke it and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body that is given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." Likewise, he also took the cup after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is shed for you. But behold, the hand of him who betrays me is with me on the table. And truly the Son of Man goes as it was determined. But woe to that man by whom he is betrayed." So here Jesus is instituting the Lord's Supper. The unleavened bread that figuratively represents his body that he gave on the cross. And the fruit of the vine, which is simply grape juice, is representative of his blood that he shed for the new covenant or the new testament for the remission of sins. This is something that we observe every first day of the week on the Lord's Day, which is our Sunday, because that's the example that we have. And they began to inquire among themselves which of them it was who would do this thing. So he said, one of you is going to betray me. One of you 12 is going to betray me. And even though this has to play out this way, woe to that man who is doing it. Of course, he's talking about Judas Iscariot. And there was also strife among them as to which of them should be considered the greatest. I think this is a funny transition because, you know, first they're talking about, well, is it me that's going to betray Jesus? I don't know. Is it me? I don't know. oh, by the way, which one of us is going to be the greatest in this physical kingdom that Jesus is bringing to the earth? Which they still didn't understand. It's not a physical kingdom. It's a spiritual kingdom. It's the church. And he said to them, the kings of the Gentiles exercise lordship over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. So in normal, typical society, there are ranks. You know, you've got people that are over other people, people that are in charge, and they delegate things to other people. And we all have that. We all have bosses. We all have people over us telling us what to do. And maybe we're over somebody else and tell them what to do. He says, but you shall not be so. In other words, the church is not going to be set up like this. But he who is greatest among you, let him be as the younger, and he who is chief as he who serves. For who is greater, who sits at the table, or he who serves? Obviously, the one that's sitting at the table is greater. Is it not he who sits at the table? But I am among you as he who serves. I'm sitting at the table. I should be the one being served, but I am the one serving. There are not going to be rankings in the church. Not supposed to be. Which, of course, is completely, completely opposite of what the Catholic Church does and many other churches. You know, you got your Pope and you got your Cardinals and you got this and you got that, and they're all the clergy, and then you have the laity. All of that is completely in opposition to how the church should be set up. Now, there are, of course, different roles for people in the church. You've got your elders and your deacons. Those are the only two official offices authorized by God. You got your preacher, but he's no higher or lower than anybody else. You've got your teachers. Everybody's equal in the church. And there's no clergy and laity. And there's to be humility. Not arrogance, not pride, not, well, I'm more important than you are in the church. You are those who have continued with me in my trials. So he's continuing to talk to his apostles. And I appoint to you a kingdom as my Father has appointed to me, that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom and sit on thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. I think this is figures of speech. He's talking about the church. But I don't think that the apostles are going to literally be sitting on literal thrones judging the literal tribes of Israel. I think that's just all figures of speech. They will be honored because they are apostles. They have a very important job. They will be honored. And the Lord said, Simon, Simon, or this is Peter, behold, Satan has desired to have you, that he may sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you are converted, strengthen your brothers. Now, why is he telling Peter this? Picked out of all the apostles, he picked out Peter and said, Satan really wants you. And I'm praying for you. Because he knows what's about to happen. And he said to him, Peter said to Jesus, Lord, I am ready to go with you both into prison and to death. I'm sure Peter felt that way at the time. Then when it actually happens, we'll see his reaction. And he said, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you deny three times that you know me. And he said to them, when I sent you without purse and satchel and shoes, did you lack anything? And they said, nothing. Then he said to them, but now he who has a purse shall let him take it, and likewise his satchel. And he who has no sword, let him sell his garment and buy one. Okay, so things are going to start getting a lot more dangerous for the apostles. And we can see here, even though this is not the main point of this verse, but we can see here God's authority for us to defend ourselves. He's telling his apostles, get you a sword. Take a sword with you. Take protection with you for self-defense. For I say to you that what is written must yet be accomplished in me. And he was counted among the transgressors. That's from Isaiah 53:12. For the things concerning me have an end. Things are about to get bad. As far as Christ is going to be killed The apostles are going to be pursued and persecuted, and some of them are even going to be killed. And they said, Lord, behold, here are two swords. They had two swords among them. And he said to them, it is enough. Which to me, that indicates, okay, you've got two swords among all of you. That's enough for self-defense. I'm not arming you to go to a physical war. This is not a physical war. This is a spiritual war. So, yes, you can defend yourselves, but no, you don't need to be armed to go to war. And he came out and went to the Mount of Olives, as he was accustomed to doing, and his disciples also followed him. And when he was at the place, he said to them, pray that you do not enter into temptation. He knows that he's going to be leaving his apostles soon and returning to heaven. And he knows that his apostles are going to be left behind to complete his mission. And it's going to be tough for them. It's going to be really tough. And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's throw and knelt down and prayed, saying, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Sometimes it's hard to understand that when Christ left heaven and came down to this earth, he became a man. He was still deity, but he was also a man. So here you have this man who knows that he is about to go through something really horrible and be murdered. And he doesn't want to do it. He does not want to do it. But it's God's will that he does it. And even though he doesn't want to do it, and in another account, he said, God, if there's another way, if there's some other way we can do this, let's do it that way. But he also submits to his father and he says, not my will though, yours be done. And there appeared to him an angel from heaven strengthening him. So Jesus is having very human emotions. Fear, distress, stress. I mean, I can't even imagine knowing. He already knew what he was going to go through. I can't imagine knowing what you're about to go through. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly, and his sweat was, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground. This is not literal blood. It's just he was sweating so profusely from being so stressed that it was like he was bleeding. And when he rose up from prayer and had come to his disciples, he found them sleeping for sorrow. I mean, they were just worn out, I guess. And he said to them, why do you sleep? Rise and pray, lest you enter into temptation. Again, he knows his apostles are going to be left behind while he goes back to heaven. Although, he is going to send them the Holy Spirit as the Comforter, is how he refers to it. And while he still spoke, behold, a multitude, and he who was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew near to Jesus to kiss him. This was a sign. He had made a sign with him saying, whoever I go up to and kiss, that's your guy. But Jesus said to him, Judas, will you betray the Son of Man with a kiss? When those who were around him saw what would follow, they said to him, Lord, shall we strike with a sword? So his apostles were around him, and then they asked, you know, should we start fighting? And one of them struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his right ear. We know from another account that, of course, this was Peter, of course. And in another account, we have the name of the guy. I think it was like Malcolm or Malchus or something like that. And Jesus answered and said, permit thus far. And he touched his ear and healed him. Basically, he's telling apostles, no, don't start fighting. Allow this to happen. It has to happen this way. He's allowing this to happen to him because it's God's will. And Jesus said to the chief priests and captains of the temple and the elders who had come to him, have you come out as against a thief with swords and clubs? When I was with you daily in the temple, you did not stretch out hands against me. But this is your hour and the power of darkness. This has to happen. I knew it was going to happen. I'm allowing it to happen because it's God's will. And it's certainly not God's will that, oh, I can't wait for my son to just be, you know, tortured and beaten and crucified. I'm just really looking forward to that. No, I can't even imagine what God went through too, watching this. But he cared about mankind so much, he was willing to do this. It was the only way that could be done. Sometimes we think, could there not have been another way that this could all have happened? Another way for us humans to be able to be saved? Obviously not, because this is the way God set it up, which means it is the absolute best, most perfect way to do it. Then took they him and led him and brought him into the high priest's house. And Peter followed afar off. And when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the hall and had sat down together, Peter sat down among them. But a certain maid saw him as he sat by the fire and earnestly looked at him and said, this man was also with him. And he denied him, saying, woman, I do not know him. There's your first denial. And after a little while, another saw him and said, you also are of them. And Peter said, man, I am not. Second denial. And about the space of 1 hour after, another confidently affirmed, saying, truly, this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean. And Peter said, man, I do not know what you are saying. Third time, he denied him. And immediately while he still spoke, the rooster crowed, and the Lord turned and looked at Peter. I always find that a chilling, such an emotional verse. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Can you even imagine Jesus turning around and looking at you in the eyes? And there must have been such disappointment and sorrow in Jesus' face as he's looking straight at you, knowing that you just pretended like you didn't even know him 3 times in a row. And Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, before the rooster crows, you shall deny me 3 times. And Peter went out and wept bitterly. Peter had a godly sorrow. He was truly sorry for what he did to Jesus. And we know, as we go on, Peter must have repented and been forgiven of that sin, because Peter, you know, turned out to be a very good, faithful apostle of Jesus's. We'll see later that Judas also was sorry for what he did to Jesus, but he had a worldly sorrow. He went and committed suicide. Even though Judas could have repented and been forgiven of that sin, he didn't do that. He went and killed himself. So he was lost forever. And the man who held Jesus mocked him and struck him. And when they had blindfolded him, they struck him on the face and asked him, saying, prophesy, who it is that struck you? Just playing this cruel joke. And many of the things they blasphemously spoke against him. You got to wonder, these people, did they at any point in their lives later realize what they had done? And can you imagine how horrible some of them must have felt, that they were actually doing horrible things to deity, to the Son of God? Ah, man, I can't imagine. And as soon as it was day, the elders of the people and the chief priests and the scribes came together and led him into their council, saying, are you the Christ? Tell us. And he said to them, if I tell you, you will not believe. And if I also ask you, you will not answer me or let me go. Hereafter, the Son of Man shall sit on the right hand of the power of God. Of course, he's referring to himself. I am going to be going and sitting on the right hand of God. Then they all said, are you the Son of God? And he said to them, you say that I am. And they said, what further witness do we need? For we ourselves have heard from his own mouth. So they're going to convict him of blasphemy. They're going to say, we are executing you because you are blaspheming. You are claiming to be the Son of God. Well, he is the Son of God. So he is being executed for being truly who he said he was. And that is Luke chapter 22.